easier to transport. Okay, the plasma protein, so albumin, globulin, and fibrinogen. Okay, so albumin. This is something that we use in the science lab occasionally. We specifically will take and get albumin to use for different staining procedures. Okay. It is something that we use in our body to help with osmotic pressure and for transportation. So you can attach to albumin the fatty acids and some hormones and use them as a transport vessel. One of the big ones is osmotic pressure, especially once we get into the kidney. We'll talk about that a little later. Globulin. So globulin is going to be transporter for vitamins and metal ions and lipids. So globulin and albumin are mainly transporters. Now fibrinogen is the interesting one. Fibrinogen is the fibers that make up a scab. So there's a whole cascade process that you'll get into in physiology, almost guaranteed. Okay? The basics of it is that there is a hormone that signals fibrinogen to be created, okay? And once it is, well, not created from scratch, but to be modified by an enzyme. Once it's modified by that enzyme, then it can go into action, filling in. You have an inflammatory response, which is going to come into the actual wound site, and then from there the fibrinogen is going to be converted over. Once it is converted over, it's a fiber. Your platelets fill in. Okay. After your platelets, some red blood cells are also going to fill in, stack in, and that's what creates the scab as they dry. Good? Okay. So the erythrocytes are your red blood cells. For site is cell, erythro usually means red. Okay, so transport oxygen and some carbon dioxide. So this is something that usually ends up being confusing once you get to physiology. So hemoglobin has four oxygen binding sites. The red blood cell has a lot of hemoglobin. Okay? So the amount of hemoglobin varies, but there is not four oxygen binding sites per red blood cell. Okay? That sometimes gets confusing. Okay? Hemoglobin has four oxygen binding sites. Alright, so leukocytes are your immune cells, and they're the only complete cells. Your red blood cells do not have a nucleus.
Can you repeat that about the hemoglobin?
Okay, so hemoglobin has four binding sites. The red blood cell contains a lot of hemoglobin.
So then you're saying that there's a lot of binding sites. Okay.
Yep, there are a lot of binding sites. Okay, so you can carry a lot of oxygen.
So the hemoglobin is right here, and here's the red blood cells, and on the red blood cells, iron attaches to the red blood cells or the hemoglobin. I'm confused now. Because I know that hemoglobin has to do with iron, that's why the red. Am I wrong?
Okay. Yeah, I'm not getting into the iron part of it.
But the hemoglobin is what holds that.
Hemoglobin is going to contain iron.
Okay.
So.
Hemoglobin can contain iron that has the four oxygen.
Yeah. So, let's just. Red blood cell, right?
Yes.
Okay. Any red blood cell, say that this is a hemoglobin. HB is usually, yes. HB is usually the abbreviation used for it. For some reason, it never fails that I always end up having some student tell me that, oh, there's only four hemoglobins and they all bind one oxygen, and that's very inefficient. Okay? Truth is you've got more hemoglobins all throughout the cell itself, but each one of these can bind four oxygens. Make sense?
Yeah.
Okay. And I'm not giving you specific numbers just because I'm not a numbers person.
Perfect.
Okay. So, all right. So, thrombocytes are going to be your platelets. Okay, these are going to help during the blood clotting. Okay, so thrombin is actually the hormone that leads to fibrinogen becoming fibrin and filling in, and then your platelets come in, which are your thrombocytes. So notice that they're kind of coinciding with the names. All right, inside a slide. So y'all saw this at the beginning of the year. Okay, I said this is blood, know how to identify it, went through some basics. Okay, now when I go through and ask about this, I may ask something a little more in depth. For one, it is a connective tissue, which that means it is going to have cells and extracellular matrix. All connective tissues do. Okay? So, in this case, you see that there are neutrophils labeled, lymphocytes, there's platelets, there's monocytes. Okay, I'm just going to tell you right now that I'm not going to make you identify it in a slide, because it gets very confusing very quick. Okay? Because the lymphocyte looks like it has a large nucleus, because it does. However, the neutrophils can have enough nuclear DNA inside them to look just like a lymphocyte. Okay? It'd be very confusing. Same thing with the monocyte. A lot of it is variation in sizes, so you have to be able to compare. So that's not something I would have you do. However, I could ask you to tell me, is this a white blood cell or a red blood cell? Okay, because the main difference is that all white blood cells are going to have a nucleus. All right. So, hematopoiesis, how in the world do we form all of these red blood cells? Okay, and white blood cells for that matter. So, all blood cells are going to originate in red bone marrow. We've talked about in this class the fact that there is red bone marrow in your long bones, primarily through childhood, and then after that it's replaced with yellow bone marrow, which is mainly for production of adipose tissue. Okay, so in this case, most of your red blood cells are going to be formed initially as a child. You are going to turn them over on a regular basis, though. So you do still have sites of red bone marrow and red blood cell production. So the reticular connective tissue and blood sinusoids are going to be where you're going to reproduce some of this. Axial skeleton girdles, proximal epiphyseal, epiphyses, the humerus and the femur. So, you have these hematopoietic stem cells. Now, there's been some recent research in using these to generate red blood cells. And if they can use them to generate red blood cells from the hematopoietic stem cells, then they could just culture these from somebody and never have to take a bone marrow donation again, okay? Or never have to take a blood donation again. That's a possibility. However, to keep that cell alive is something we're not too good at yet. That's one of the big limiting factors for any kind of human study and also any kind of microbial study. I think it's the last time I heard the number, it was somewhere around like 1 to 10%. Yeah, I know that's a big spread, but it's 1 to 10% of the known bacteria that we can actually culture on a plate in a lab. It's really, really low. A lot of it we can't culture in a lab. We can go sample it, figure out what it is, look at its DNA, but we can't grow it. We can't keep it alive in the lab. Same thing with human cells. A friend of mine did his research looking at the formic acid production of an algae. So when he was looking at this, he was testing on human cells. The only cells that lasted long enough for him to be able to use were cancer cells. So a lot of the research that we've been doing specifically on cells is on cancer cells. It's on a specific strain of cancer cells, and they're named, if I remember right, for the woman that they were harvested from. Okay? So her cells outlived her. All right. So your hematopoietic stem cells are going to divide, and they're going to become lymphoid stem cells or myeloid stem cells. So the lymphoid stem cells are going to give rise to your B and T cells. Okay, these are your killer cells. Your myeloid stem cells are going to give rise to all other blood cells, everything else. Okay, so your B and your T are very specific. They are mainly your attackers, your helpers, and your regulators for your immune system. Okay, good?
Is there a name for them, other than B or C?
No. Well, okay, yes, there is. And I'm trying to remember what it is right now. But
like
they're commonly always referred to. It's not beta.
It's a B and T cell.
It's B and T. It's commonly referred to like that. And I had it in my head the other day when I was going through this lecture last time. And
I can't remember it.
Yeah, it's not. There is one. It's just, I don't think it's, this is one of those, it's not named after a person. It's actually named for something in the cell. And I'm just trying to remember right now. So, alright, so your hematopoietic stem cell, very top, going to differentiate into either a myeloid stem cell or a lymphoid stem cell. So it's still a stem cell, so it doesn't know what it wants to grow, be when it grows up fully yet. Okay, so then it's going to go and at this point differentiate into a cell that's almost going to tell you exactly what it's going to be. So why is that important if we're looking at blood cells in the hematopoietic region of your body? We can tell generally what's going on. What cell is it going to become in the future? So there's a pyroerythroblast, which is going to end up eventually becoming an erythrocyte. Then you have your myeloblast. There are three primary types of your myeloblast, which are going to be your eosinophils, your basophils, and your neutrophils. And then your monoblast will become a monocyte, which will eventually become a wandering macrophage. Platelets. So you need platelets produced because that is how you are going to be clotting a wound. You can't just depend on cells to break apart. So in this case, you have a megakaryocyte, which will end up coming from a myeloid cell. And it generates your platelets. It's very good at generating the platelets. It basically makes little vesicles, and the little vesicles become your platelets. You have a B lymphocyte and a T lymphocyte. So your B cells end up being a little less specific. Your T cells have to have the antigen presented to them, and they will specifically target the cell in an attack, whatever that cell is, whether it's a virus-infected cell or if it is actually going to be a bacterial-infected cell. The T lymphocyte will come in, bind to it with tight bonds, and then from there it will secrete a protein to open up the membrane and inject it with something that's going to tear it apart. Okay? So, alright, so in this case, you can see that there are the adipocytes in this micrograph of red bone marrow. So, they do have to have stored energy there. The stored energy makes it convenient for them. Immature blood cells will eventually become mature blood cells, and they will go through the blood sinusoids and on their way out. Your reticular cell fiber, you can see it in here, you won't be able to see it in the slides that I have in the lab. Immature red blood cells, and your erythrocytes. But this slide is not something I have available to me in lab. So look at it while it's pretty. Okay. So, erythrocytes, most numerous of the formed elements. Okay, we talked about it earlier in percentage-wise. So they're going to live 100 to 120 days. no internal repair system. So basically, once they are broken or anything happens to them, they're toast. They are going to be filtered out at that point. Okay, whether it is filtered out at your kidney level, which we don't want them filtered out, or they're broken down and either going to be your lymphoid organ, your spleen, or in your liver. Oxygen transporting cells is what they're mainly for. They do have a biconcave shape. In other words, it looks like a donut that somebody didn't completely take the middle out of. Okay. 30% more surface area, and it is going to allow them to form stacks, but also bend and flex. So this almost kind of has like a function like your vertebrae. They have no organelles and no nuclei. So that's why I said earlier, when it has a nucleus stain, that is when you know it's a white blood cell. Okay? Packed with hemoglobin, I explained that earlier. So the cell membrane proteins for recognition, this is what's going to be your blood typing. So ABO blood typing and your positive and negative. So those are antigens, by the way. So, So the antigens are what's on the outside of the red blood cell. It's a protein that you can use to identify that cell as either self or not self. That is how they actually take and do blood typing. So you can mix two different people's bloods together. If it coagulates, in other words, if it starts to form a scab, okay? If it starts to coagulate, form a scab or little clots, then you know that they're incompatible. If they don't, then for the most part, you're okay. That's originally how they started to figure this out, and they compare blood types. They also found the positive and negative was in rhesus monkeys. Okay, so that's where the Rh comes from, and positive and negative, because that's where it was originally found.
So it's the outside of the cell?
It's the outside of the cell that's going to actually have the antigen hanging off of it. Individuals that have O blood type don't have antigens.
And that's why they're like...
That's why they're compatible with most. Okay. Your A and B is going to both be separate antigens. If you have AB blood type, you have both antigens. Okay. So that's why it's so hard to get someone to donate blood to you. Well, part of the reason is because of that. The other part is because it's a small percentage of the population actually has it. So those antigens would be out here. This is the biconcave cell with a cross section through it. And it shows you generally, based on micrometers, how far it is, or excuse me, how distant it is between the two membranes. Alright. So they can form stacks. It also helps when you form a stack. It is going to help push things through. So if you are talking about pressure, when you're talking about pressure and collision, these red blood cells, if they can stack together, they gain more mass at that point. So it tends to push on through wherever it is that there is starting to build a clot. All right. So hemoglobin accounts for 97% of the cell's volume. So like I said, there's a lot of hemoglobin there. So, components. Globin is going to be two protein chains, each with two heme, red pigment molecules. The heme is where the iron is. Okay, it is at the center of the heme. It's going to bind the individual oxygen molecule. Oxyhemoglobin, oxygen bound to iron, ruby red color. Deoxyhemoglobin is where there's no oxygen and is a dark red color. Okay? So, blood as it goes through your body is never blue. Why in the world do you have blue veins that you can see? It's an optical illusion. Okay? Welcome to physics. So, Okay, it is an optical illusion. It is not actually blue. It just makes it look blue because of the reflection of the light, and which particles of light penetrate and reflect back. Okay, so
depend on the pigment of your skin too.
Yes, because if you have a darker pigment, you're less likely to even see it.
So this is the walking comparison. She's all translucent with her blue ring. Dang.
Casper. Yeah. I've seen it before where there were some students that I've had in the past, literally if you were trying to draw blood from that individual and you missed, you had a problem.
Yes, all right there.
It's there's a roadmap. For me, I'm not really fair skinned, but a little darker than fair skinned, and you can still see them. So the heavier the pigment, though, usually the harder it is to find. My fiance Chelsea, good luck finding them on her, but also her blood vessels are deep. Alright, so there's about 250 million hemoglobin red blood cells and about 1 billion oxygen molecules per cell. So, it's a lot. Okay? Told you I wasn't going to hazard a number. There it is. Okay. So, in this case, I do not expect you to understand, or I expect you to understand that there are four binding sites on hemoglobin, but what I don't expect you to understand is the exact structure of hemoglobin. Okay? You should know that there's a lot of hemoglobin in the cell and be able to apply that a little bit. Okay.
You want to know there's four binding sites.
There's four binding sites.
The hemo, the hemi?
It's four oxygen binding sites on hemoglobin.
Okay.
So, erythrocyte disorder, sickle cell anemia is probably the most common. I had somebody tell me the other day that they were told that covering sickle cell anemia was insensitive. I'm sorry. Okay. So it is a condition. Because some students may have it. In my past, I've had four students that have had actual sickle cell anemia, and one person that I think did, but somehow he made it in the Marine Corps, even with sickle cell anemia. So, but the general gist here is that you can't miss it in a blood smear. It's very, very unique. Okay, it makes the red blood cell, instead of being this round donut shape, it makes it become a sickle cell or a sickle shape. Okay, the sickle, the erythrocyte, it's going to result from a single amino acid that's changing. That single amino acid, in this case, it is going from glutamine to valine. And that change is caused by a genetic change. So it is in the genetic makeup. Sickle cell anemia primarily comes from one region, and it is primarily Central Africa. Why in the world? So this does lead to death, right? Okay, so if untreated, sickle cell anemia will cause you to die. But here is the catch. So this is where it gets to be, in my personal opinion, an interesting example. So in Central Africa, there was a high death rate for malaria. So malaria was mosquito-borne. People were getting bitten. They ended up having this malaria-like symptoms, and then all of a sudden, full-blown malaria, they're out, nothing they can do. Well, the plasmid that actually, or plasmodium that actually takes and leads to malaria infection cannot infect sickle cells. So, the plasmodium that actually infects the individual only infects individuals with healthy red blood cells. So, malaria will kill you no matter what age you are. Sickle cell anemia kills you at like 35 to 40. So, if you are living in Central Africa, And at that point, they are betrothing each other to each other at like 12 and 14. So people are getting married at like 12 to 14. So if you're getting married at that age and your life expectancy with sickle cell anemia is 35 and malaria cannot affect you because you have sickle cell anemia, you're going to have children. And those children are going to have sickle cell anemia and they're going to live because malaria is not going to kill them. So because it shortened the life expectancy by almost half, it didn't shorten it below the reproductive threshold. So what that means is that people could have children before they died. So that actually was seen as being a beneficial adaptation in that region. It's kind of interesting to think. So there was whole tribes that they would find that had sickle cell anemia, the whole tribe, literally. They had no issues with malaria, but they were dying at 35 and 40. As long as their nutrition was good. Okay? So, interesting example. Alright, so.
If I may ask, what causes the pain? Is the blockage in the vein?
What causes the pain for malaria?
Yeah. It says resulted for oxygen delivery and pain.
Yeah, that's one of the primary reasons why is because of the fact that it's clotting, which leads to soreness, because the muscles are not getting oxygen they need, and then you're building up lactic acid. So that's one of the primary causes. There may be another cause that I just haven't looked at. It's not really a disease condition, but I think it's pretty good.
So they live, but they live in pain.
Yeah. So, which you can mitigate that out in a first world society, but in third world societies, there's no medication, so most of the time, patients just deal with it. I have one student, she had it, she literally just dealt with it, that's all she did. She was not on any medication or anything.
Is that mainly where it comes from? The country-wise?
Yes, as far as I know, okay, that's the only region that if you have any heritage from that region, then you're at risk for it. And then that's when they start to evaluate you for actually having it.
My nephew has the gene for it. He doesn't have it, he has a gene.
Okay, so he's a carrier.
Yes.
Okay. So that, I've only ever heard of it coming from that region. Now, I'm not an epidemiologist, so that's my word, one caution. But usually every time I've heard of it, every time I've met somebody that has it, they're actually from that region or were from that region. I had the Marine that I knew, I thought he had it because of some of the symptoms he showed, but somehow he got in. He might have been a carrier, I don't know. I've been trying to figure it out for years, and I haven't seen him since I got out. But he showed the pain, and he would occasionally get to where, when he was running, he'd just almost pass out. But he grew up running his whole life. So, literally, he would run without shoes, and he ran faster. I don't know why. Don't ask me. He was an interesting duck. But, yeah, he showed up. I don't know where I was going with that one. Anyway. So, all right. Anyway, so sickle cell anemia is a fairly interesting case. Eventually, look into any examples because it's just kind of cool to me, the fact that it led to them being able to reproduce in that region. All right, so they are crescent-shaped, and the misshaped blood cells are going to rupture easily and block small vessels, so capillaries end up being clogged. So sometimes, depending on how the patient is responding, they may have to use an anti-clotting agent if that is becoming an issue. All right, so blood groups and types. So blood type is determined by proteins. These are the antigens. The blood plasma also contains other proteins called antibodies. So if there is a problem, you're going to throw bodies at it. It's the way I've always kind of remembered antibodies. So, I'll say it again. If there is a problem, you're going to throw bodies at it. Okay? So the antibodies are something that you have built from your immune system. Either you built them due to exposure from a natural exposure or from a clinical exposure. In other words, being injected with a killed virus or with a killed bacteria. So the binding sites of your antibodies are going to be a complementary end to the antigen that it attaches to. Okay? So that is called complement fixation. Blood typing is going to be important for transfusion and for graft transplants. So you need to ensure that the person is the correct blood type. Otherwise, because of the antigen that is on the blood cell, those blood cells will be attacked if they are the wrong antigen. Graft transplants, we found that it's also the same. Okay, mainly because you want to make sure that there is the least amount of an immune response as possible for any tissue transplant, especially kidney transplants. So wrong blood type, during transfusion you get agglutination. So basically what happens is the antibodies are going to attach to the antigen. So antibodies, the Y shape or T shape, and it attaches to the antigen on the surface of the red blood cell. And in this case, they're going to attach to each other and collect, and then they fall out as a clot. Okay? Excuse me. And eventually, hemolysis will happen. So the cells will start to go through apoptosis. Alright, so blood types. You have A, B, AB, and O for your ABO blood types, and then you have your RH blood types. So, type A is where you have the A antigen. Okay? And you are also going to have in your blood plasma an anti-B antibody. So in other words, if there is a B antigen on the blood cells, it's going to attach to it, coagulate, and lyse the cells. So basically, it's pointless. To give somebody with A blood type, B blood type blood, virtually pointless. Okay? And it creates more problems than what you want to deal with. And then type B. For type B, there's an anti-A antibody. Now, type AB, they don't have either antibody. So, they will accept A and B blood types, if I remember correctly. And O blood types is going to have both anti-A and anti-B antibodies.
It's on the next page.
Okay, there you go. So, the other one, these guys' pictures. So, okay. So, Rh positive means that it's actually going to have the surface antigen. Rh negative, no antigen at all. Okay, now we'll go to the picture of letters.
So, because the B blood type and the A blood type have their reciprocal antibody in the plasma,
yeah.
When you receive it in an AB blood type, doesn't that, or don't the antibodies attack?
The antibodies from the individual will attack, yes.
Okay.
If you can pull those antibodies out, then they would, and you'd be fine.
Okay.
So, that's something that has been played with before, but if I remember right, they came to the conclusion, he's almost died, they came to the conclusion that it was not beneficial time or energy wise.
Okay.
They just get blood donations from the right type.
Okay.
Alright. So, patient with blood type A positive, they are going to have the A antigen, and they are going to have, in this case, be this positive, the Rh antigen. So they've got two antigens present on the cell. The AB antibody is for B and the donor blood types. So you can actually receive A positive, A negative, because this antigen is just missing because of the negative. Okay, the Rh antigen is missing here. So that means that there's not going to be any issue with the antibody actually attaching to it, killing the cell. So, no antigen at all. It's positive, so it's going to have the same Rh antigen. O negative means that it has no antigens at all. Okay? We good? All right. So,
I don't know what Rh has to do with each blood type.
So, use red blood cell primer. Okay. So, the way it kind of shows everything, so say that this is the B antigen here. Okay? So, this is a B blood type cell. So, you're going to find those all over the surface. Okay? And then you're going to have an Rh antigen.
Do all blood have an Rh?
No.
No.
So this would be an Rh positive cell, and it would be a B cell. So this blood type would be B positive. Okay.
So then the antibodies would have to be opposite.
So the only antibody that this one would actually have, since it's only a B-type cell, you would have an anti-A antibody. Okay? Does that make sense?
A little bit, but I just don't know, like, which ones have Rh.
If it's positive, it has Rh. If it's negative, there is no Rh. So it's two different naming systems because the antigens were actually different enough. So if I put another red blood cell here, so this is going to be a B also. Let's go ahead and keep it simple. So this one would actually be a B negative because it's negative for the Rh antigen.
So is it beneficial to have the Rh?
So it's just, I don't know that I've seen anything say that there's a benefit for it. Okay, it's just something that we have for blood type. So don't know exactly why it's there. That's something that I've never taken the time to look at.
It's just a way to name it or differentiate.
Try to be as clear as possible with this. So, okay, there at some point was an advantage to having a specific blood type before we started doing blood transfusion and everything. And that advantage, I don't know that anybody knows what that advantage was to why some people have B blood type, some people have A blood type, and some people have O blood type. Nobody knows exactly what caused that to be useful. All we know now is that we have it. And it's useful in identifying for us now, we use it to identify who can receive that blood transfusion or that transplant. So it's just something we use right now. I don't know that anybody's indicated why it was important to have it through evolution. Does that answer your question? Okay.
So all the negatives are absent of Rh.
Yes, they do not have the Rh antigen, is all it's saying.
Okay. So there's two antigens that some blood can have.
There's two antigen categories. They can either have A, they can have B, which is one category, the ABO category. Or they can have the Rh antigen or no Rh antigen. So they either have it or they don't, Rh. ABO, they can have A, B, or none.
I'm going to need to know this on the test.
Yep. Okay. So, hemolytic disease of newborns. This one's kind of interesting, mainly because we figured out a way around it. So, the anti-RH antibodies are going to form if RH negative individual receives RH positive blood, or RH negative mom is carrying an RH positive female, or excuse me, fetus. So the second exposure to RH positive blood will result in a typical transfusion reaction. So there's pretty much no issue with the first child. That's why I'm saying the second instance. So it usually comes up with issues with the second child based on the blood type of the father and the mother. You can figure out what the child could possibly be. Okay, so you'll know whether you're at risk or not. It's all based on your RH antigen. So in this case, this is the critical one that you need to know, especially if you're going to work in medicine. RH negative mom carrying an RH positive female. Or fetus, if you want to say that. So in this case, if the child is actually going to be positive and it's the second child that that mother has had, they will have to get an injection. That injection is called a Rogam injection. That Rogam injection is something that will prevent the antibodies from attacking the actual blood of the mother. Okay, because the child will be manufacturing the antibody that will attack the blood cells of the mom, which causes problems for the child. Because now the child has agglutination happening in their blood and in their circulatory tract, which can cause loss of oxygen in areas, which leads to underdevelopment and possibly death of the child. Okay? Alright. So
the Rogam injection will prevent what?
So it prevents the antibody from working.
Okay.
So, alright. That is hemolytic disease in the newborn, kind of in a nutshell. So, if you notice, it's pregnancy 2 where it happens. Alright, I'm just going to go ahead. I don't want to get too much into that. Alright, so leukocytes, white blood cells. So, they're going to protect the body from the infectious microorganisms. There's a couple different types. 5 primary types. You should know the 5 primary types. They're going to function outside of the bloodstream in the loose connective tissue. So you have your granulocytes. Your granulocytes, there are lots of stained granules present in the cytoplasm, and agranulocytes are going to have few stained granulocytes. So they're usually A means without. Alright, so your agranulocytes, you have a monocyte and a lymphocyte. For your granulocytes, you're going to have neutrophil, eosinophils, and basophils. Ironically enough, the way I remember this is BIN. Okay, so, BEN. Basophils, eosinophils, and neutrophils. Okay, those are your granulocytes. Your agranulocytes, LNM motors is a dealer near where I'm from. Okay, so there you go. Alright, this is another way that individuals memorize this. Never let monkeys eat bananas. Okay, so it's a common acronym that has been used for years. Now, the cool part about this is, and when I was taking the class, I didn't hear this, but the cool part about this is that this is in the order of their actual percentage. So your highest percentage is your neutrophils, then it's your lymphocytes. Okay, after that you get your monocytes, which are the next, and then the eosinophils, which are the next and highest in percentage, and then basophils. Okay, you should know that order. Okay? So this is only looking at leukocytes. Your other formed elements, your platelets and your erythrocytes, are going to make up a larger portion of the blood. All right. Your neutrophils, they are going to be pale blue and pink cytoplasmic granules, okay? So, like I said, it's hard to identify them in the slides that we have in lab. Part of the reason why is because, well, somebody didn't take a lot of time doing it. The function for the neutrophils is their fast migration to the site of the infection. They're going to phagocytize or eat and destroy bacteria. So these are your bacterial slayers. Your eosinophils, they have red cytoplasmic granules. Okay, they're going to attack the object covered in antibodies. So this specifically targets your antibodies. This is where you get into the two-part mechanism. What I mean by that, the antibody attaches and just sits there on the cell until it's found. When it's found by your eosinophils, they're going to kill it. Okay? They are going to help reduce and control inflammation like allergies and asthma. Mine evidently suck. And your basophils are going to be purple-blackish cytoplasm. They are going to be the darkest cells, so they are going to be almost solid purple. Function and inflammation mediation, and they are going to release histamines and heparin. Heparin is something that you can use to prevent blood clotting. Vet clinic I used to work in, the vet was... he was very different than any other vet that I've ever seen. The main reason why is because he would take a small gauge needle, okay, so very thin, he would heparinize it. So what that basically meant is we would take the bottle of heparin, put the needle in, turn it upside down, pull in, push it right back in, and so all that was in there was the needle itself and maybe a little bit in the actual syringe was heparin. Why he did that was so that way he could use that small gauge needle. Okay? I'm telling you this for a reason. Okay, I'm going to get there. So, in the dogs that we were pulling blood from, we were doing heartworm tests. So you pull it up, we don't do everything like human medicine, so you just grab over and then all of a sudden the vein pops up, you know where to go. Okay? You go into the vein, you pull what you need out, and then you pull back small injection site, right? So that's an advantage for the dog. One of the big advantages for using that small needle is because you're going into a large vein, so you're less likely to rupture. Okay. Another part of it, too, is it's going to heal fast, so in animals it's better. Why I say all of this, okay, is because a lot of times you have issues getting blood from children. So, if you're having issues getting the blood from a child, maybe going to a smaller gauge needle and using heparin may be something that may be beneficial. Because now, what it means is the heparin prevents the blood clotting in your small gauge needle, so that way you can actually draw blood in. As long as the gauge of the needle is large enough for your red blood cells not to stack on each other. So, forget which gauge we were using, but it was fairly small. It was, I want to say they were insulin needles. So it was small enough to where it made a difference having the heparin in because it did not clot in the needle itself, and we got the blood we needed.
The blood clots that fast?
Usually not, but it was a safety measure for us because if you're handling an animal that is violent and irritated and mad at you, the less time you spend there, the better off you are. So we would heparinize the needles. Okay? Just made it easier. So it may be something that may come into benefit for you later, but that's why I'm telling you. Okay? Alright, so heparin's kind of interesting. Histamines, histamines suck. That's why we have antihistamines.
So the heparin works kind of like a lubricant.
It's an anti-clotting agent, so yes, it kind of does. It prevents the red blood cells from sticking together and coagulating on fibrinogen. Okay. Alright. So, agranulocytes, monocytes, leukocytes. So your monocytes, they're the largest. They are going to transform into macrophages, and they eat other cells, literally engulf them. Your leukocytes, so T cells, B cells, they are going to fight the infectious organisms. They are going to be your most specific form of defense. T cells, they're going to kill the virus-infected and tumor cells. That's what it is. Okay. T cells specifically target tumors. That's where the T comes from. Okay. B cells are going to produce antibodies that are going to tag the foreign cells for destruction. There is a whole cascade that they will talk about, hopefully, next year or next semester for you if you're taking physiology. I know I'll talk about it in anatomy and physiology. Okay. So, your T lymphocyte. In this case, there is the target cell bearing the antigen itself. Okay, so the antigen binds to the antibody, and then your T cell comes in to attack it. It's going to secrete proteins that are going to lyse the cell. I was talking about that earlier. Okay, the proteins that are going to go in, they're going to embed themselves in the membrane. Once they embed themselves into the membrane, the T lymphocyte is going to inject into it an enzyme. The T lymphocyte is going to attach and move on about its merry little way. Okay, the target cell is going to die because its membrane has been lysed, which is basically forcing it into apoptosis. The lymphocyte, B lymphocyte, in this case, it will form plasma cells and memory B cells. When it forms the plasma cells, the plasma cells, their only function is to generate antibodies. That's all they do. So a plasma cell comes in, generates these antibodies, and the antibodies are going to attach to the antigen when it is found. So they free float in the actual circulatory tract and then the lymphatic system and do what they need to do until they find an antigen binding site. Then once they bind to that surface antigen, you are going to have a macrophage or other killer phagocytic cell come in and attach to that antigen and take it out. Good? Alright, thrombocytes. So, cell fragments. These are going to be your primarily clotting agents. Okay? So, they're the cell membrane plus cytoplasm. They break off of the megakaryocytes. So, like I was saying earlier, basically it's a little vesicle that breaks off. Function in clotting of the blood. They're going to bind to collagen fibers, the damaged area in large numbers, and that's going to plug the small holes between your fibrin fibers. Okay? The fibrin fibers are what make the fibrin weave. That fibrin weave is what the platelets are going to get stuck in, which are your thrombocytes. Okay? Platelets, thrombocytes, same thing. Good? Okay. And I went over. So, take a 10-minute break, and we will come back. The next one.